they're here, you're safe. Probably. But you can't stay for long. You have work to do, and now you're spooked. You know that this dusty track holds surprises. The kind of surprises that will send your legs in one direction and your head in another. And so you ask the boss's permission to make a new track through the farmer's field. And you're told no, you're not to upset the neighbours. You argue, you make good points, but the answer is the same. No. Follow the track. Follow the track and pray you don't find it surprises. And this is when you realise what your life is worth. Less than a few hundred stems of corn. And so you walk on, hating. Hating the people who send you down the track. Hating the people who want you dead. And hating the people who hide them. Can you picture this? That it's you on the track? Maybe. Can you feel it? Can you know how it feels to see the smiling faces that want you dead? A life that's worth less than a few bags of corn? No, you can't. So don't judge too harshly. Chapter 1. The Church. July 2009. There was no room inside, but it was the kind of beautiful day that can only be found in an English summer, the dappled sunshine suggestive of comfort and nostalgia, and so I found myself a place in the crammed churchyard. The crowd was a mixture of civilian suits and dresses, shot through with uniforms from every branch and arm of the services. Hanging back at the edges were the curious onlookers, drawn in by the regimented pomp of a military funeral. I felt eyes on me and looked to my left. A short, sallow-skinned man in the blue of the RAF took it as an invitation to approach. He was a southerner and spoke to me as if I was a long-lost friend. "All right, mate, you were in Iraq, weren't you? 2 years ago? Never forget a boat race." He was an RAF regiment gunner, and like all infantry soldiers, I despised his type, thinking of them as blaggers and posers. I also disapproved of his use of rhyming slang. We were at a funeral, not the set of a Guy Ritchie movie. But the man had come to pay respects to my friend, and so after the pause to assess him, I put out a grudging hand. "I was, yeah." "You knew him?" he asked, his head bobbing towards the church. I nodded. "You with him when he died?" I hadn't been. Jamie had become a friend as we went through pre-deployment training together. You can get to know anybody fast when you live in each other's pockets for a few weeks, and Jamie's infectious enthusiasm and outlook on life left me with a big soft spot for the kid. His unit deployed just a few weeks earlier, and now he was dead. Killed by a single shot from a sniper, as he called from a rooftop about his choice of ration pack for dinner. I found out about his death on Facebook. I'd been excited when I saw him log into the chat application. Gez. "Hiya mate, how you doing?" Jamie. "Hi, James was killed this morning." I didn't have the sense to put it together. Gez. "Sorry to hear that mate, was he a pal?" Jamie. "Sorry, this is James's mum. He was killed this morning." And now I watched as his flag-draped coffin was carried towards the church doors by the rigid guardsman. But I wasn't watching my friend. I was watching his mother. There was no sobbing, no sign of frailty. She carried herself like a queen, and my eyes threatened to leak for the first time as I saw that courage. I'd see it in other mothers of the fallen, and that same strength breaks your heart and fills you with purpose in the same moment. The service was held. Jamie would be buried elsewhere, a closed ceremony. I left the churchyard, changing out my dress uniform in the alley behind a hair salon. Some of the girls saw me and smiled. I smiled back. I pulled my car over to the side of the main road, watching as the dark fleet of Jamie's cortege approached. The streets were lined. Afghanistan was the kind of shooting war that the public could pretend to understand, not like the poison chalice of Iraq. Now our dead soldiers were revered. Kipling's verse on the thin red line of heroes as true as it ever was. I looked again for Jamie's mother. I didn't know why. Perhaps I was thinking of my own. How she'd look if it was me in the ground. I didn't see her, and traffic resumed. The people of the town dispersed, the war for them over until the next reel of grainy combat footage on the 6 o'clock news. I headed west, to my unit. On the drive, I thought about Jamie, his family, and my own. I thought about how his child was without a father, his mother without a son. I thought about how we had both volunteered for a war that we knew nothing about. A war that had taken his life. That night, I flew to Helmand. Afghan. Chapter 2. Summer Camp.